You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To the Journey.
To the Journey!
I'm your co-host, Trista Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
And today, we are going to talk about our top five moments of season two. That's right. We started this series a couple weeks ago, and it's been a while since we did our top five moments of season one. And these are our personal top five moments of season two. It's not necessarily what we think are the best moments of season two, or the best episodes of season two. These are just moments that mean something to us and that we really enjoy.
Right, yeah. Favorites, therefore subjective. Your mileage may vary. And of course, as always, we invite you to talk about your favorite moments, either in the Babel conference or on Twitter. We haven't talked about our Twitter handles in a couple of weeks, so let's get that out of the way really fast instead of at the closing of the show. My handle is Oh the Profanity. Tristan, where can people find you?
And mine is at the Insane Robin.
Yes, and people do chat us up there quite a bit, and so feel free if you haven't already, and if you do, by all means, keep on.
Keep on, keep it on.
That's right.
All right, well, we're going to do this in descending order with our fifth favorite to first, and Char, I'd love to hear where your number five lies.
My number five is a rather predictable choice, hence why it's number five, but it's still a great, great moment. How about... when a calm Janeway welcomes the Vidians to the bridge and their demise in deadlock.
I did not put this on my list, specifically because I knew this would be on yours.
Well, I thank you, as always, for letting me have it. And most of my list was constructed around the ones that I knew you wanted to choose. And therefore, there's certain things that I'm really hoping you're going to say.
I may surprise you because there's certain scenes in here that aren't particularly me.
Oh.
So I might throw some curveballs. But like,
all right.
But explain to me like the epicness that is that moment in deadlock.
Well, that's pretty much it. It is epicness. You know, this Janeway, of course, this is the episode with two Janeways. The ship kind of gets split in two. One is very damaged and doesn't look so hot. Janeway's hair is all disheveled and the other one is perfectly fine. And it's because of these weird anti-proton bursts that one ship is giving to the other. It's kind of like destroying the other one to keep the other one alive. And anyway, the two Janeways work together. And in the middle of all this is a Vidian invasion. And what happens is one ship sacrifices itself to save the other. Because the two can't exist at the same time anyway. And so the Janeway, who knows that she's going to destroy her ship, the Vidians come onto the bridge. And she says,
"Hello. I'm Captain Catherine Janeway. Welcome to the bridge."
"Commander."
And that's just so awesome. Her calm demeanor is just so incredibly... It would be really hard to stay that cool and collected under that kind of pressure, the intensity of that kind of moment, knowing you're going to die. And she does it. She does it like a boss.
It's true. They're very calm and collected for people who are just about to die and people are still standing at their stations. And Chakotay looks like it's just another day on the bridge. And he's like,
Pretty much. That's what it looks like, too. It's just la-di-da-di-da. Yep, another day. Oh, you're here? Oh, good. Yeah. Boom.
I'm about to meet my animal spirit or spirit animal.
Right.
Or spirit guide. No, it's spirit guide. That's what he calls it, spirit guide?
Well, spirit guide. Yeah, spirit guide, spirit animal also works. Yes. So that is my pick. What is your first pick?
Well, my number five would be, and it's hard to organize these, but it's episode 13 of season two, Prototype.
Okay, I left the B'Elanna episodes alone just for you, just for the record.
this isn't particularly an episode that I enjoyed that much, but there's one moment that always sticks out in my brain, and I think that's pretty much how I made my list this week, was the moments that I remember from those mm-hmm. episodes. Like when I think about this season, what little tiny words or sentences that really just kind of pop up, or what sequences pop up. And in Prototype, there's this segment where Taurus is talking to 3947, and they're talking about sentient life and automated robots and everything like that, on how her culture, how humans and how Klingons and how the Federation use robots. And she says this line.
In fact, we have only one sentient artificial life form in our society, and he is treated the same as any human.
The same. He is equal to a builder.
That's right. He works on a ship just like you and I. He wears the same uniform I do.
What is his designated number?
He has a name, like the rest of us. Data.
This is in season two. This is midway through season two. Voyager's still finding its footing. And any kind of reference to TNG, I was giddy like a schoolgirl whenever that happened. And I feel like Roxanne Dawson played this this moment very well, because she shows pride as an engineer and pride as a Federation member of this, that they treat artificial humans the same as humans. And she even has a little bit to it where she's like, he wears the same uniform I do. You know, that she's taking mm-hmm. personal pride in wearing the same color as Data does. And then she hits the name at the perfect point, and she says it with a smile on her face. And I just melt as a young boy who loves TNG and loves Data and loves B'Elanna. It was just this perfect moment for me. And so that's one of my favorite moments in season two.
That is such a great pick too, because I think all of us had that fanboy moment when, oh, she said Data. That's so awesome.
Yeah. Like, oh my God, she said it.
Yeah. We all had that reaction, right? Because like you said, there's not a whole lot of TNG crossover in Voyager. And so the fact that she mentions Data, and with that delivery too, as you described so well, it's such a great, perfect little moment. I'm glad that you picked it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I just when I think about that episode, that's the moment my brain goes to. That moment, and when she destroys the prototype, when she spends all that time trying to develop it, and then she just stabs it in the heart. That's a solid moment.
Yeah, and then there's that moment at the end of the episode where Janeway says the same line, like, what, 5 times in a row? It must have been difficult.
Yeah. It must have been difficult. Yes, it was.
It was necessary, but it was difficult. Yeah, kind of a strange way to end that episode, and yet kind of fitting at the same time.
All right, what's your number four?
My number four is Janeway and Chakotay talking about the possibility of Voyager needing to be a generational ship in Elogium.
Oh, yeah, solid.
Yeah, this is not exactly one of those standout episodes that I say, yeah, this is good, solid Star Trek, but this conversation that occurs in this episode is probably the best part of the whole thing.
We should consider the fact that it might be necessary for the crew to start having children.
It might take us a long time to get home.
If it does take 75 years, we're going to need replacement crew in about half that time.
Who'd have thought we'd be considering a generational ship when we were ordered on a 3-week mission?
I know. But it's a problem we have to face now.
This actually has so much to do with Voyager and its arc, and the fact that this is something that makes Voyager a little different. Because, of course, there were kids on the Enterprise and whatnot, but they are out here alone. And this ship was never meant to be a generational ship, but it might be a necessity. Mm-hmm. And what does that entail? It entails a lot of things. It means a lot of things that Janeway is going to have to essentially develop and be responsible for as the captain of the ship that she was never expecting on a 3-week mission to retrieve some Maquis. And so it kind of shows just how much Voyager and the people inhabiting it, how things have been turned on their heads for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I like that moment. I was going through the list of episodes of season two, and Elogium kept popping up in my brain. I was like, what moment from Elogium do I want to put down? Because it's, you know, like, there's some cheesy moments, but there's some really great moments in the episode. I'm just like, what do I put down? And I didn't put it down on anything, but that's a good, solid moment. And I hate it when Voyager is compared to Battlestar Galactica, where Battlestar yeah. Galactica is basically the Jesus Christ of sci-fi shows. Like, I don't understand it. That's how people treat it, and I don't know why.
Well, it was more realistic. Okay, we get it. It was a different show.
It was gritty. You know, like, people were alcoholics. Yeah, okay, I get it.
Right.
I understand.
Yeah, that's awesome. It was a different show. Go watch that one.
Yeah, good for you. Go watch that one. But there was one moment where it was early on in the show where Adama is in the CIC, and he's with his senior officers, and he looks in the background, and they're like his officers are talking about, I don't know, something, Cylons or something, and he's not really paying attention. He's looking off in the distance, and he sees two officers flirting with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of like breaks, like, people are asking him what he thinks about this battle scenario, and he goes, they need to have babies. And he's just and then, like, everybody's kind of like, excuse me, what? And then that's when it dawns on him that the human race is now in an endangered species, and mm-hmm. they need to repopulate the species, and so they need to encourage people having families and getting pregnant and things like that. And so when you talk about the moment with Janeway about wondering if this needs to be a generational ship, it just made me think of that.
You know, that's what Chakotay should have said when he caught those two junior officers kissing in the turbo lift. And then he goes to Janeway, they need to have babies.
They need to have babies. And you know what? We need to have babies.
They really should have.
That's what he should have said. I can bring anything back to Janeway / Chakotay. Anything.
Mm, and I'm so glad you did, because you know that I'm a fan. And there is that one conversation in Elogium where he kind of hints to Janeway, like, you know, she mentions it's going to be necessary for people to pair off. And then he fires back with, as well as you.
Yeah, like, I mean,
that's
everyone?
Not the exact line, but right. Yeah. Everybody. And then she has that line of, as captain of the ship, there's certain luxuries that I don't have. Plus, I'm not giving up on Mark just yet. Yeah. I mean, it was early on. This was long before the Dear John letter.
Dear Mark letter.
The Dear Mark letter. We should call it that from now on.
I like that, the Dear Mark letter.
Me too. Yes. Because anytime that I hear Dear John, I always think John Deere. And then I'm afraid I'm going to say it wrong. But if we say Dear Mark, that takes that issue away.
I think they made that joke in Dumb and Dumber.
Yes, exactly. Like, that's where I'm getting it from.
Like, yeah, she wrote me some John Deere letter, and I wasn't really paying attention.
Right. Right. And whenever, like, say if I'm talking with my husband or something, and a Dear John letter for whatever reason comes up, we say John Deere letter,
John Deere,
because
yeah.
of that.
It's
yeah.
The
Thank
only
you,
way
Dumb
you can
and Dumber.
Do it. Yeah.
Anyway, that whole tangent aside, what is your next pick?
My number four is episode 3, Projections.
Okay. And what moment is it?
I really like this episode. I like this episode a lot. This was written by Brendan Braga and directed by Jonathan Frakes. And it was early on. It's practically season one. And I think this is the first real hardcore Doctor episode where we start to figure out that he is an individual and he has personality. And, like, yeah, we did see that in season one. We saw a lot of it in season one. But this is, like, I think this is one that really kind of asks the question and throws it in your face, is he real, is he not? Now, this was asking a different kind of question of, is he human or is he not? But this one also asks a question, is he sentient or is he not? Is he a member of the crew or is he just a toaster? Is he just a Hydra spanner, you know?
Right.
And we also get another TNG connection with Barclay.
That's absolutely true.
And
yes.
This is our first Barclay presence.
Yeah,
and
first of a series.
That's right. And the first mention of Zimmerman, right?
I believe so, yeah.
This episode affects a lot of Deep Space Nine,
mm-hmm.
a lot of Voyager in the future, and it's just there's some great continuity that can be traced back to this episode, and so I think that's why I like it so much. But there's this one moment where the Doc is going through a lot of crises, and he's in physical pain, and it's the first time he's really started experiencing pain, and he's on the ground, and people are trying to convince him to come back, you know, that he's actually Zimmerman. And there's this moment where Chakotay shows up, a holographic version of Chakotay shows up, and he tries to give him a pep talk, a speech. And mm-hmm. I think I like more of the way he says it than what he says, because
okay.
he gets this Chakotay verve going on, and he even like kneels down and to get on his level. He says,
just because you're made of projected light and energy doesn't mean you're any less real than someone made of flesh and blood. It doesn't matter what you're made of. What matters is who you are. You're our friend, and we want you back.
think you've mentioned this moment before.
Yeah, yeah, I think I have, because it just meant something to me. Like, I love Chakotay, and I love that he was the one that they sent, because he has gravitas. And it shows that even at the beginning of season two, because this is the beginning of season two,
mm-hmm.
you know, third episode, it shows you that the crew thinks more of him than just Tricorder.
Yes.
That's why it's my number four.
Right. Yeah, we already went from, well, he's just a hologram, we'll reset his parameters, to he's more important to us than that.
Right. And I appreciate that moment. All right, what's your number three?
Good one. My number three is in the 37s, where they're starting the old Ford truck.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, okay, now, I have issues with that episode. I've made that known in many episodes prior. But I love this moment, because what really makes it is Tuvok's reaction when the truck backfires. You know, never mind the whole fact that they shouldn't have started it in the first place. But when they do... and then it makes that sound, and he pulls out his phaser. Yeah. You know, because...
and he's looking around.
Tuvok reaction. Yeah. He thinks it's a gunshot, and it's just so hilarious. Everybody ducks. And I'm laughing my rear end off, because it's such a great, great moment. It's so much fun. I just like, I don't know, it's a very comedic moment.
I like that scene a lot.
Because it seems so appropriate. Yeah, so, I mean, I kind of dig that. I really do.
I'm with you. I like that moment. I like the episode. I'm a big fan of the episode. Yeah, just like seeing a truck in the cargo bay and seeing Tom behind the wheel, and just the sight of Janeway sniffing manure is just weird, and
yeah.
you know, and just
horse
and just
manure.
Yeah, Tuvok just spinning around, just totally getting in security mode. It's great.
Right. Well, and then later on, he has to comment, you know, we might want to add a little bit more ventilation into the atmosphere here because of all the emissions going on, and as a nice little commentary on that.
Yeah, nice little commentary. Yeah, unless we want to asphyxiate, let's open up a window or something.
Into space. Yes, let's do that. So, what is your number three?
My number three is from the same episode. It is from the 37s. And as I said just a moment ago, I like this episode. I like this episode a lot. This is the first episode I ever owned of Star Trek.
On VHS?
On VHS. It was the first episode I ever owned. And my moment is the landing of the ship.
Mr. Paris, prepare the ship for landing.
Captain, I think I should tell you, I've never actually landed a starship before.
That's all right, Lieutenant. Neither have I.
Okay, I should not be surprised at all by this.
I love that moment. Yeah, like, just them landing the ship. We've never seen that in Star Trek before, apart from a shuttlecraft. And to land an entire starship is just amazing. And seeing Tom's reaction when he'd never done that before, seeing Blue Alert for the first time,
mm-hmm.
and just Janeway getting that smirk on her face when she's like, let's land the ship.
Yeah, she feels pretty smart.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's just, I think it's just a lot of fun, and it was a hell of a way to open up a season.
It really was. Yeah, it was great special effects, especially for the time.
Mm-hmm.
They look a tiny bit dated now, but they still look good. You know, when they put them on Blu-ray, it's going to look awfully nice again.
It's going to look nice again, absolutely.
We're going to eat that up. Yeah. Oh, and I really do hope that the Blu-rays do happen. There has been a little bit of pessimism about that due to low sales for the TNG Blu-rays.
Mm.
They're not 100% certain if it's going to happen or when it's going to happen, but I have a feeling it's going to have to happen at some point. Because if they want to continue showing reruns of the show, they're going to have to put it into high def.
And we also got to think about a worldwide audience, too, is that Americans are not the only ones who watch these episodes. And they're very wildly popular all over the world and in different languages. And it needs to happen. It just absolutely needs to happen.
It really does. It does. And if you want to see it happen, guys, vote with your dollars. Go get the TNG Blu-rays. Tell them what they want.
Absolutely.
Tell them what you want.
We're barreling through these picks at breakneck speed.
Warp speed.
What is your number two?
Number two. Yeah, we are going awfully fast, aren't we? All right. How about when they were touring the Q Continuum in Death Wish?
This is the Q Continuum? A road in a desert?
I just love that so much. They did such a great job designing this set. Because it makes such perfect sense to me, this lonely road in the desert. Everybody has that fake sense of happiness. There's the pinball machine of the galaxy. You've got the Scarecrow, and everybody's been the Scarecrow.
Like, everybody's been the Scarecrow.
Right, the croquet of the planets, the clock. I just love this depiction. When they did the Civil War thing in The Queue and the Gray, I felt like they kind of ruined it a little bit. But this was great.
This was definitely metaphorical. The Civil War thing was a little bit on the nose.
Mm-hmm, it's too much in your face.
Yeah, it was very in your face. And this one, you had to think about it. And this one had to be explained. And that's what I really liked about it, is that even though we'd never be able to comprehend the Q continuum in our tiny meat brains, and that Janeway and company would never be able to comprehend it either, they couldn't even comprehend the metaphor. The metaphor had to be explained to them. And that's what I really liked about it, is that it wasn't obvious right away.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Civil War thing, even though I did like that episode, The Q and the Gray, the metaphor was barely a metaphor. It was very obvious.
Yeah, it wasn't. Let's put it that way. You know, the only real metaphorical thing I can think of, and even this was pretty direct, was the whole idea that the Q guns were way more than just guns. I mean, had Janeway gotten hit, she probably would have been obliterated. But Q did, and he said, imagine if it could make me bleed, what would it do to you?
Yeah.
So there was that. But still, that's still pretty easy to translate.
Yeah.
Whereas, the whole road in the desert thing, I mean, you really could have always argued, well, we don't want to see the Q continuum because then it takes away some of the mystery. Well, this didn't take away any of the mystery.
No.
No. So that's what I like about it.
Yeah, no, it didn't take away any mystery. It was still mysterious. It still had that mystique. It didn't rob it of mystique whatsoever. I just love Q's reaction to it. Not Quinn's, but Q's. When he was just like, when you could tell, he said, it's like, yeah, this is my home, whatever.
Right.
It's like, we've all been the Scarecrow. It's just like, we've all sat on the porch. But then you start to see the inner workings in his brain, where it's just like, maybe there is more to this. Maybe we do need to shake things up a little bit. I think, you can see... I can feel like you can see a little bit of foreshadowing in that moment for the ending scene of the episode.
Yeah, I agree. And then also even just for the future of the Q, because if they have to pretend to be happy with those really fake big smiles, well, then something's not quite as perfect as it seems, is it?
Yeah.
For the omnipotent Q. Yes. So that is my pick. What is your number two?
My number two is from Twisted. Which is no surprise.
What? I am shocked that you put Twisted on your list.
Anybody who's ever listened to pretty much any episode of To the Journey will know that Twisted holds a special place in my heart. But it's the opening scene. It's Kes's birthday party.
Ah, okay.
Surprise!
Surprise! Happy birthday, my sweet.
Happy birthday, Kes.
Oh, imagine 2 years old today. If you ask me, you don't look a day over one.
I just, that scene, it warms my cockles. I love this episode, and I love that scene because it's this moment when it's episode 6, so it's early on. It's when we really see them start to be a family, where it's not just Janeway saying it's a family. It's them actually being a family and actually celebrating something together, where Neelix made a cake. Even B'Elanna and Chakotay are there. They're, hanging out in the back with some drinks. And Tom, we see the beginning of the jealous Neelix, where the green-eyed monster, where Tom gives her a locket and Neelix sees it and he just can't stand it for the rest of the episode. And we see repercussions of that later on. And I love that it was set in Sandrines. And even though I'm not a particular fan of Sandrines, and the doc is there, it's just I like everything about it. And I love them trying to explain blowing out the candles and about how you can't talk about what you're actually wishing for. And and I just love that Kes is two.
Yeah, she's two.
Everything about it. I think it shows us that it's a close-knit group, and it sets the stage for the episode as well.
You said cockles.
I did.
Sorry, that's all I could think about the whole time you were just talking now.
You're just waiting for me to finish so you could say that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm a horrible person. No, but it is really cool because this is, I think, the first time we really see them all together in Sandrine's, hanging out and celebrating a birthday. Kes is two. The Jubalian fudge cake, the first of many that we see through the course of the series.
I want that so bad.
Me too. I want to have a birthday in Sandrine's just for the Jubalian fudge cake. I want to make that happen somehow.
Screw Sandrine's. I just want the fudge cake.
Well, where would you have your birthday party?
Would
you have it in Fairhaven?
That's such a good question. I'd love to visit Fairhaven, but I don't know if I want my birthday there. Captain Proton. I would totally have my birthday on Captain Proton.
Wouldn't the robot destroy the cake, though?
I would deactivate him a la Seven.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so I'd have a black and white birthday cake.
Cool. All right. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. Which I actually have had a black and white birthday cake before. I've actually had more than a few black and white birthday cakes.
Really? Birthday noir.
We thought this was funny, but like in high school, I think freshman year of high school, I was instructed to go pick up my own birthday cake.
Okay.
And like I had to go order it because like there was some, like normally like my sister would go do it for me or my mom or my dad or something like that. They would go and it would just be like happy birthday or something like that. But they made the mistake of having me go do it. And so I went with my best friend and we just tried to get the most random thing. And we just got a picture of George Washington. No happy birthday, no mention of my name, just an outline of Washington's face. And my whole family was just like, what on earth is this? Why did you do this? So like, why is this funny? And we're like, if you don't get it, you just don't get it.
That is a very random thing.
For like 5 or 6 years after that, I would try to get the most random thing on my birthday cake that had nothing to do with birthdays.
And what's so funny is, like, I would understand maybe if your birthday was closer to President's Day where they'd have a cake like that for some reason.
Yeah.
But it's not. So.
I once put a volcano on there and put a quote from Dante's Peak.
Nice.
You know, stuff like that.
That is really cool. You've had some creative birthday cake ideas.
Well, that's why I make the big bucks. You know, it's because my creativity with birthday cakes. I'm a veritable current age PETA.
Okay. I have no idea what that means.
I was referencing the Hunger Games. He frosts cakes. Never mind.
Oh, okay.
I'm somewhere out there, there's some
fan.
Hunger
I'm
Games
sorry,
nerd just
I
losing
your
it.
Moment. I apologize, but I'm sure there were plenty of people listening out there in podcast land who got a kick out of it.
I'm sure there's a number of people chuckling, but let's move on to your number one.
Number one. Okay. This is coming from an episode that people probably are not expecting, and that is Tattoo.
I was not expecting that.
Yeah, that's why I'm saving it for number one. And it has nothing to do with Chakotay and the Akuchimoya stuff. There's a nice little B story in here that I adore that really gets me through Tattoo, and that's when Kes extends the life of the Doctor's Lavodian flu.
Oh, yeah.
But doesn't tell him, because he thinks he's practically going to die, because he programs the virus for 24 hours, and then when it doesn't go away, he's just, something is wrong, and I'm feeling miserable, and this is awful. Please, please help me. And that gets the point across about how his patients might really feel when they come in and helps him develop a little bit of empathy. Plus, we get a great line from the doctor, and he says about Kes.
She is far more devious than I ever suspected.
Also, fan correction, it's the 29-hour Lavodian flu.
Oh, my apologies. My apologies.
I love it when he does that first sneeze, and then he's like, holographic tissue.
Yeah, don't give it to patients.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, this is a fantastic little story in a story. I mean, it just doesn't really, it's there. It has nothing to do with the A plot at all. So you're kind of switching gears between Chakotay, what's happening on the planet, and then what's happening on the ship. And this is such a cute and funny little thing going on between these two. And I just love the fact that it's Kes who does this. It's not Belana.
Yes.
It's Kes.
Yeah, yeah.
It gives Kes a little bit of character.
And that's why we get the line, like, she's far more devious, yeah.
Right, yeah. Plus, it's a very important thing for the doctor in terms of understanding what being ill really does feel like for the rest of us who aren't walking, talking medical encyclopedias.
All right. Well, I guess that leaves it to my number one.
It does. What is it?
My number one goes back to Death Wish, where you were
okay.
A couple of moments ago. But it's the Riker scene.
All right.
It's where we have the Woodstock guy, Isaac Newton, and Riker come in. And I absolutely love this moment because, you know, I have a lot of references. I guess there's a lot of... Geez. Okay, so in Projections, there's a Barclay reference, and in Prototype there's a Data reference, and in Death Wish there's a Riker reference. Mm-hmm. I love the TNG references in here.
Apparently you do, yes.
But Riker's hands down my favorite character, as many of you guys know. And I love anything with Riker in it. And I love it, like, when, like, he snaps his fingers, and then we see the flash, and then we see Riker's face, we see Jonathan Frakes, we're just like, wait a minute! You know, like, we're all floored. We're like, he doesn't belong here! What's going on? And right when we're screaming what's going on, you see Riker, who just gives it in that tone that only Jonathan Frakes can give, where he's like, Q, what the hell is going on?
What the hell is going on?
Straight, just like that.
Great imitation, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. I've worked on it for years. It's that and his walk.
Oh, do you practice the Riker maneuver?
Oh, I practice all the time. Like, every time I get into my computer chair, I have to throw my leg forward, which is really hard, because you know how tall my computer chair is. But I just, I love it because, and not just because of Riker, but just bringing people from the past as witnesses. If only we could do that in real courtroom settings, where we can bring people back who have passed away or who are unavailable, you know, and everything like that, so they can give witness testimony. It's like, it's a lawyer's dream in order to do this.
Pretty much, you know, the guy in the Jeep.
And also, like, when Q starts repeating stuff back, like when the Woodstock guy, Ginsburg, and like he said, he's like, oh yeah, the groovy chick with the long red beads. And then Q says, the groovy chick with the long red beads. You know, just like how he hits those lines. And I think that's what I really enjoy, is because Jonathan Delancey and Jonathan Frakes together is always a good time. And it was nice to see it one more time.
Totally. And this is such a great Q episode just in general. Mm-hmm. You know, especially when Q calls himself to the stand. I mean, that's such a Q thing to do.
Yeah, it's such a conceited Q thing to do.
It is, and it's so great. Thank you so much. It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, well, that's our episode. That's our top five moments. We'd love to know what some of your top five moments are from season two. So please go to the Babel Conference, or hit us up on Twitter, or email us, or send us a message.
Please do. Although, Tristan, I'm really disappointed in your list. I think you're forgetting something very important.
What am I forgetting?
Where's the monkey business in all of this?
Oh, that's right. You know what? I completely, absolutely, 100% forgot that Resolutions was in season two.
Oh, my God. You forgot the monkey. You have betrayed him.
I have betrayed
How
the monkey.
Dare
oh my
you?
Gosh. Yeah, I honestly, for some reason in my head, I always thought this was season three, but it's not.
No, it's the end of season two. It's right before Basics. Missed opportunity. The wrath of the monkey is now going to be bestowed upon you.
That's such a huge misstep, because there's so many moments that you and I both love in Resolutions, where it's just like the Janeway Chakotay moments, like the back rub, the tub scene. Like where they hold each other,
right.
The just the monkey run around. Yeah, there's a lot of great moments that didn't make the list that probably should
have. And I was absolutely certain that the monkey was going to make your list, and so I left it alone entirely.
I was about to ask, like, well, why isn't it on your list then?
Well, that was kind of why, and as much as I do love Resolutions, I mean, I don't know. I just felt like it was going to be too obvious if I put something down like the back rub scene.
Yeah.
Even though I love that. And I hate the Ancient Legend. That was never going to make my list. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. And the whole idea with the bathtub, yeah, that's great, but the monkey.
Yeah, I hear
the
you.
The monkey.
I hear you.
Well, season two moments aren't the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I really, really, really hope that if they do that, they make Chang the villain, because, you know, Captain Chang instead of General Chang or whatever, you know? I mean, that just seems like the perfect way to go.
Earl Grey.
All right, Riker, we're promoting you to captain. I mean, you killed the last captain. We usually don't reward that. That's usually not our policy, but in this case...
Well, to be fair, he had spent some time on a Klingon ship.
The Orb.
But the Federation and Bajor as a member of the Federation would be helping rebuild Cardassia. And I could see, like, very much the relationship between the U.S. and Japan today. I could see the Federation and Cardassia having that kind of relationship moving forward.
To the journey!
Janeway has a very distinct pain noise.
Yeah, she
kind of
does.
You know what I'm talking about?
It sounds sort of like she's suffocating.
Yeah, it sounds like she's suffocating and sometimes, and I'm going to keep it clean, not always in pain.
The Ready Room.
He is the best cosplayer ever because he's so buried himself in his part that we have no idea who this guy is outside of the impersonation of Tuvok.
Exactly.
He's the Christian Bale of the Delta Quadrant.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
If I'm not mistaken, in any upcoming episode of Next Generation, we don't see full-grown golden retrievers running around the decks of the Enterprise. And I'm also a little worried that Captain Picard has never played with puppies.
Commentary, Trek stars.
But you'd rather see Red in charge than him.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right.
Because you really want porn stash to go down.
Yes, yes, you do. And that sentence out of context sounds really strange.
Literary Treks.
As great as Picard is and his Picard maneuver, I don't think Picard straightening his shirt is going to help him when he's going up against the Riker maneuver.
Fair enough, yeah. So.
Axanar, the official podcast.
The changes that we've made, the change to the nacelles and several other aspects of these ships to make them distinct and not the same ships as in Star Trek 2009.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We're available on virtually any kind of platform where you get your podcasts, and none of them are possible without the help of our wonderful sponsors. So let's hear about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Also, if you yourself would like to support Trek FM and help us keep these podcasts coming to you, please consider becoming a subscriber on Patreon. We have multiple levels of contribution, and what happens is it's sort of like a Kickstarter, but you subscribe on a monthly basis, and everything, every little bit of it helps. And we appreciate all the support that we have gotten from those of you who have become subscribers already. We especially want to thank our associate producer, Lisa Stevens. You can follow her at Flip18.
On Twitter.
On Twitter. Now, next week, we are going to take up a listener suggestion. And Tristan, what are we doing?
What we're doing is we're going to be talking about flashbacks or backstories or character development that never was discussed. And we're going to talk about how that was a missed opportunity and what we would have liked to have seen during the 7-year run of Voyager. But you'll have to tune in next week to hear it. Until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!